All right. Between groups and within groups designs, we know they're old friends, also called between subjects, independent groups, cross-sectional. Lord, they keep making up names. Within groups, within subjects, repeated measures, longitudinal design. I have never heard a satisfactory explanation for why within gets hyphenated and between doesn't. I have talked to statisticians. I have statistics books that date back to before it was called statistics. And there's no explanation. I have the book that introduced in book form the within subjects design. I have copies of the research articles published in the early teens of what is the introduction of the within groups design and the first analysis of that. Nobody says a damn thing. If you can come up with one, let me know. And match groups design, which is our new friend. Now, the choice of ANOVA is influenced by which of these types of designs is used. And we're going to talk about that very specifically, but first I want to set the stage for these design types. So between groups is what you think it is. Different ways of talking about it. You can say each subject completes one of the IV conditions, or you can say different groups of subjects each complete one of the conditions. Same thing. You'll find yourself settling into whether you describe what happens to a group or a person because of the way your research community talks about it. They're the same thing. Within subjects and lots of other names, each subject completes all of the IV conditions, or you can say one group completes all of the IV conditions, whichever way you want to think about it. Now, are there designs where not everybody completes all of the conditions? Just barely. Here's what I mean by that. Most statistical packages won't analyze the data if somebody has done some but not all of the within subject conditions. The estimation, the error term estimation, the degrees of freedom estimation for that are sufficiently nightmarish that most standard packages just say, not it. You know, the kneel down, put your finger on your nose, not it in sports. That one. There are very few research designs where there is intentional attrition, where people do some but not others. You will occasionally run into it. There's things called Latin squares designs, Greco-Latin squares designs with dropouts. Typically, missing data is a problem, not a strategy. But in some of the research areas you're heading into, particularly if you're in engineering or if you're in chemistry, you will begin to see some of those designs. And if you need help, come on back. We can talk about them. But they're not omnipresent enough to spend the 40 minutes we would need to begin to understand them. So we're just sort of going to go complete data. Matched groups. Subjects are measured on a matching variable. There's the rub. Remember when we were talking about stratified sampling? And stratified sampling is such a good idea, except for the problem that you have to have data on people before you select them. Which means they have to have been in some other study of some type, so you got the data tucked away, so you can decide who you want based on who they are, because you already know data from the people you haven't selected yet. Same kind of problem. If I'm going to match people into groups, I have to have data before I do the assignment. So it's not quite as bad as stratification because I can get that data after the selection. But in between the selection and the assignment, I got to go get data. And sometimes there are time costs, availability costs, and cost costs that prevent that. So like the great idea of stratification, the great idea of matching has a fundamental problem. You need more data than you're likely to have. That's why it's one of the reasons that the very big granting agencies started several years ago to focus on grants that were 5, 10, 15 years long instead of 1 or 2 years for a single study. Because the intent was, they actually gave them some extra money to build up a community participant pool. Go out and run a survey study on as many people as you can get. Hang on to that data. It will help you with your stratified sampling and with your matched assignment. And it turns out that those both were important enough that it was worth a tremendous investment. Plus, once you have a sample of, say, grade school children, I can follow them through to old age. So subjects are measured on a matching variable. You form groups of subjects with the same scores. There's a lot to talk about here. One member of each matched group completes each IV condition. So I go into that scouting pool. I grab two 12-year-olds. One of them is going to be in one condition. The other is going to be in the other condition. All right? That's just a start. I know it's just a start. Let's keep going. Yellow part. This is what determines the ANOVA that you use. You already know 2 out of 3. Between groups design, between groups ANOVA. Within groups design, within groups ANOVA. Matched groups design, we'll talk. It's kind of like on Star Search. Right? They go, and the winner is commercial. Always a frickin' commercial. Candidates for matching variables. Subject measured variables that are known or likely potential causal influences on the DV besides the IV. Age, prior performance, SES, any personality trait. If the groups are equivalent on a variable, by matching it, it can't be a confounding variable. We're in a situation where we either have a variable that is so important that we don't trust random assignment to give me initial equivalence, or I can't do random assignment to get initial equivalence on all of the variables, so I pick the ones I am most afraid of being confounds and match on them. How are we doing? It's that better than nothing approach to applied research. You're not going to be able to randomly assign. Okay, I'm really worried about these three things, so I'm going to match on them. Now, you can get carried away with matching on things. I was fortunate enough to be included in some of the early Sesame Street research that was done in Pittsburgh, where we were literally handing out televisions, monitoring, watching, and looking at school performance and other really cool stuff like that. We started out with 14,000 families that had agreed to take a television and watch according to a schedule. We'll worry about that another time. So who gets what? Who gets what? Random assignment isn't going to work particularly well. So we want to match on some things that we're particularly afraid of. And the people who were running this decided on 8 variables that they needed to have matches on. So, I wrote a program because though I failed miserably at learning Spanish, I did learn Fortran. And so I wrote a statistical program that would bake those. And here's the thing. To match 8 variables within a quarter standard deviation of each other, we went from 14,000 families to 800 matches of 3. 14,000 to 2,400. The more you match, the fewer matches you're going to have. Does that make sense? The tighter it has to be, the more variables you match on. And those matching standards are something that you want to be careful and make sure that you have looked up within your research community. Because the study that preceded ours had a problem because they matched to within a standard deviation, which they thought was pretty cool. But think about it, a standard deviation. Standard deviation is the difference between a GPA of 3.0 and 1.8. Calling those equivalent might not be the way to go. So you got to pay attention to your matching standards. Sometimes you can't get subject variable data ahead of time. Sometimes what you do is a pretest on the dependent variable. This is considered not quite, but almost a panacea. This is sometimes as good as you can get. The theory is that if I match people who are equivalent on a pretest of the DV, whatever differences there are between people and subgroups of people has had its impact on that construct, and that initial equivalence is like having initial equivalence on all the variables that caused it. Now, whenever you start saying things, control over all the variables that cause something, your suspicion flag should go up. Okay? It's typically used because it is perhaps the most available thing to match on. It requires just one assessment Now you've got data for everybody that is tied to lots of other variables, and it is well in the tradition of better than nothing. Before you do it in your research area, make sure that you know whether people care about it or not. There's another whole statistical model, which we're not going to do, but if you need it, I can help you with it. It's called propensity matching. What you do in propensity matching is you literally predict whether in the natural world somebody would be in one condition or the other. You take that model of all these different variables and you use that to estimate the probability that a person would be in one IV condition or the other, and you match on that. And that gives you a much tighter, pretty elegant multivariate matching. So if you run into propensity matching or propensity analysis, propensity confound control, and you need help explaining that, I love that because I was still little when that first caught on, and it was a lot of fun. There was some awesome arguing. Now, everything we've talked about so far has been with respect to subject variables. Most of the time when people think about matching, they're thinking about controlling subject variables and increasing initial equivalence, part of internal validity. You can, however, match on procedural variables. When you do that, in most research areas, it's called yoking, as in putting a yoke on two oxen, so whichever way one goes, the other has to go, and they end up pulling together. That's where it comes from. Yoking has something to do with procedural variables. The first really important use of yoking was when they were trying to study memory, and they wanted the two people that were getting the two different instructions for how to try to remember things to have the same exposure of the words. So the word would go up, you could study it for as long as you wanted, and when either of them hit the next button, they both went to the next. Okay? Turns out that sucks, because something going away when you anticipate it going away and something going away magically because someone else said is not the same study time. Study time is best measured from how long before you wanted to quit did it go away. It's one of those weird variables that its most useful form is measured backwards. You with me? The first example of that people noticed was that the medical people were losing their mind because they were not finding a relationship between age and certain things that they thought should be strongly tied to age. So they redefined age as how many years before dead. And when you define age not as how long since birth, but how long before death, the variables were collected, you find that there's all sorts of wonderful predictors, all sorts of useful things, and it changed cancer research almost completely. And it completely changed pediatric cancer research, because suddenly a whole different list of variables looked like they had hope. So weird things like how you operationalize something can be yoked. If you've got different treatments, deliverers, location, number of exposures, stimulus sets, computers that they're working on, room that they're in, all of those things can be yoked. I grab these two because they are my matched pair. It's an interesting notion. They are my matched pair, and I make sure that they get the same everything. That's yoking.
What's the difference between that and ongoing equivalence?
Well, it's a shot at trying to increase ongoing equivalence because you've got procedural standardization a pair at a time. Everybody here is exactly like everybody here, but these two match each other, and these two match each other, and these two match each other, so this average and this average should match. Does that help? Cool. You must have a good reason for each matching variables. Like we talked about, the more matching variables, the harder it is to make a match. Get good measures on the matching variable. Avoid proxy variables whenever you can. Here's my favorite proxy variable story. I was reviewing an article for Journal of Research, Education Research, which insists on true experiments in situ. So the toughest combination, you got to be in the real world running real experiments. And they're talking the whole way through in the introduction about how when you're looking at whether a teaching innovation works or not, you need to pay attention to the intelligence of the participants, because different procedures work for different kinds of folks. And they were focusing on intelligence. And then in the discussion, they're focusing on intelligence again. But there was no intelligence in the method or the results. So I go back through it, and what they had done as their proxy for intelligence was freshman GPA. Not just GPA, freshman GPA. One of the least predictive years of your life is your first year's grades as an estimate of your intellectual capacity, prowess, or extent, and things that come from it. But in the land of better than nothing, they talk themselves into it. Don't do shit like that. Okay? If you want to correct for grades, call it correcting for grades. You must have a large enough sample to form a useful number of good matches. There's a trade-off between the exactness of the matches and the number of matches you can make. We'll see this in a minute. Get the matching variable measured beforehand. It is entirely possible to collect matching variable data when you're collecting the dependent variable data. You got a bunch of people, and you match afterwards. It even has a name for it. We will call it post hoc matching, where the matching takes place after the assignment. A priori matching happens before the assignment. Post hoc matching takes place after the assignment, maybe even after other things. But you've got to be able to argue convincingly that that matching variable was not influenced by their participation in the research. So that subject variable on which you're matching has to be deeply characterological, not contextual, all about trait, no bit of state. And frankly, that's difficult to estimate for many of the things that we want to match on.